Tonight, we're going to talk about some housing and mortgage reforms proposed by the House. So stay right there, because we're going to talk about it right now. You're about to hear the opinions, suggestions, and observations of a licensed real estate broker in California. Since each situation can be unique, do not consider anything said here as legal advice for your specific needs. Always seek out the advice of a suitable professional in your area for advice tailored to your situation. Please remember that when following advice, your results may vary. Please also understand that the information provided here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the speaker considers important.
Well, you seem to understand. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another edition of Real Estate Realities with the Rebel Broker. My name's Rebel. Well, it's not Rebel. It's not really Rebel. My name's Robert Whitelaw, and I am the Rebel Broker. Licensed real estate broker in the state of California and member of the National Association of Realtors. But please don't hold that against me. I right out of the gate. I almost choked just right there. Okay. Once again, I have to start the show by thanking all of you folks for – I got to assume this is you guys doing this, promoting the show, or at least just visiting more frequently or something. The numbers are looking really good. I'm encouraged. I'm hoping to see a lot more growth. So for if you know someone out there that you think would enjoy the show, please do share it. But the trend is continuing up, right up since the 20th. When I started doing daily shows. So I do appreciate you coming along for the ride. Let's sit back and see what the government's up to. There's usually rarely any good news when the government decides to get involved with this kind of stuff. But there are a few bills out there that just made it through the House Financial Services Committee. And they're not passed yet, but the goals that the politicians are waving around are pretty good ones. Quote, we seek to simplify the rules, reduce complexity and compliance costs. Complicated and costly regulations serve as barriers that too often keep small competitors off the playing field. With regulatory relief, we can level that playing field between big corporations and small businesses and create a healthier economy. So yeah, one thing that would be awesome is if smaller players could come and compete in the lending space. I think more options for consumers is better than fewer. And I think smaller lending institutions versus all these monolithic ones are clearly better options, particularly since most of what we saw come out of the downturn was a consolidation, right? Because we use taxpayer dollars to bail out some of these gigantic banks. What we ended up with was is fewer banks, and that's not good for you, or that's not good for you or me or anybody. So anything that will at least nudge it in that direction for me is a good thing. I'm happy with it. But there are a number. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. House resolutions that were passed. They're not law yet. They still have to go through a little bit more of the process to become law, but they seem to have the support to get it done. I mean, I'm seeing these things passing by pretty respectable margins. And I thought what we could do, just run down this list. I'm really torn because this is not a hugely sexy topic. But these are things that would absolutely poke you with a stick down the road, right? When these things change, these represent opportunities in some cases. So let's go ahead and jump right in. The first one is House Resolution 3192, the Home Buyers Assistance Act. This resolution delays enforcement of the CFPB regulation surrounding the home buying process to allow more time for the CFPB to ensure purchasers and buyers are not unfairly harmed by this new regulation. And with that, you may be thinking, well, gee, Robert, what the hell is the CFPB? because that was the first thing I thought. It is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and they're out there for you. If you want to check out what the heck they do, they are at consumerfinance.gov. On their website, right in the front here, it says you have the right to be heard. Over the past 4 years, we've heard from thousands of consumers like you looking for help along their financial journey. As they take charge of their financial futures, their stories and complaints inspire and help inform the work we do to create a fairer marketplace. That's a whole other topic in and of itself if we would like to discuss how these kinds of things help or hurt. But the point here is that they are actually delaying enforcement of a lot of these regulations that were designed to just help you because a lot of these regulations were stupid and onerous and made it far too expensive for little guys to participate. So they're going to be reviewing those and allow some of them to be delayed so that some buyers aren't harmed by these new regulations. HR 1210, the Portfolio Lending and Mortgage Access Act, would address the onerous requirements of Section 1411 of the Dodd-Frank Act and codifies the common sense understanding that financial institutions who hold mortgages on portfolio have a vested interest in ensuring that their customers repay their mortgages. HR 2673 would provide regulatory relief for community financial institutions and make it easier for Americans to access affordable mortgage credit and put a stop to QM, standing for quitting mortgages. So, and I'm hoping that this regulatory relief that they're talking about for community financial institutions is just regulatory, that there isn't anything here that says we will give you money when you loaned money stupidly. If a bank loans money stupidly, they should reap the downside as much as they reap the upside. But that's a good thing. I mean, I I'm all for taking the regulations off of the back of a lot of these different lending institutions. And you know what? So much of this is just dog and pony, right? The government goes through a lot of trouble to bail these guys out, likes to point to them as the reason why so many of these bad loans got given without actually mentioning that the government, through its regulations and through its actions, demonstrated to banks that if you didn't lend to subprime borrowers, if you didn't show that you had loaned to underrepresented folks, which typically translated to if you hadn't lent money to people who weren't qualified to borrow it, then we would put the hammer on you and stop you from being able to do business. And this is a topic we've covered before. Remember that way back in 1994, there was a bank, I think, in Boston. And prior to that, there had been the Community Reinvestment Act from the 70s, and it never really had any teeth. Then suddenly, for the first time in 1994, a bank petitioned to get – whenever a bank wants to open a branch or do anything, there's all this regulatory crap that they have to do to make that happen. They have to get permission to do that from the government, which – annoys me. But in order to do that, they have to get permission. And when they went to go do that, they said, well, you know what, bank, we don't think you're lending enough to underrepresented folks, so you don't get to have your extra bank, or you don't get to acquire this other bank. And every bank sort of collectively dropped their trousers and lost their lunches, because that was the first time that had ever happened. So they suddenly realized, if we don't do this, if we don't make subprime loans, and you can directly translate that into poor loans or bad loans or loans with a very high probability of not being paid back. That's what the translation is, right? A subprime loan isn't referring to the rate that you're getting. It's not referring to the property that's being loaned against. It's referring to the person doing the borrowing. They are not a prime borrower. In other words, they are not a qualified borrower. Starting in 1995, it was just yet another bribe that lending institutions had to hand off to the government in the form of, all right, you're making us do this. So I know that kind of goes off a little bit into the woods, but if we can pull some of those kinds of regulations off the backs of these guys, I think that's always a good thing. There's always the unintended consequences. I'm sure every person in government who really pushed for subprime lending was focused on getting a home into someone's hands. They're all there. We want to do the right thing and make it possible for folks to buy a home. Well, you know, unfortunately, you can't circumvent financial responsibility. You can't circumvent all these other things. And you need to judge people based on what they do. And a credit history is a pretty darn accurate indicator of the probability that you can pay something back. And what the government mandated was that banks in some cases were supposed to ignore that. And that's how we got there. It's not that complicated. But now they – and then once it all happened, of course, they blamed the banks. It's like telling your kid to put out the trash, but it's not even like that. It's telling them to go out and buy the flimsiest bags they can find to put the trash in, and then getting mad at them when one of those bags breaks, taking the garbage out. Right? The mess was made not because they wanted to use the cheaper bag. It's because you told them to use the cheaper bag. You made them use the cheaper bag. Really a horrible example, and I now regret even bringing it up. But I hope that somehow you've managed to decipher what the heck I was trying to get at. All right. H.R. 2243, the Equity in Government Compensation Act of 2015. This is absolutely a wonderful feel-good one. This reinstates the salary caps for CEOs at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which were eliminated by the director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. And this one passed 57-1. So I'd love to know who the one guy was who voted for it. You know, that's really good. I wonder if I can Google this. I could Google it fast enough. I could just pause the show and Google it. Let me see if I can do it without pausing it. Who voted against? I really want to see this. What? The chances of this being enacted was 3%, according to govtrack.us. Let's see here. This all happened within the last 24 hours, so let me just put this back to the last 24 hours and see. Well, just took me to the same thing. Introduced votes. There have been no votes. So this hasn't even been updated with these votes yet. This article's from today, so this isn't even updated for that. I'd love to know who voted against it, because this is nuts. But anyway, you know, for those of you who've paid any kind of attention to this thing at all, you know that Fannie and Freddie played a huge part in the downturn. And my argument would be that not only should these folks not get raises, most of these folks should have been absolutely kicked out on their butts when this went down. Most of these folks were complicit in pushing this stuff away. And over the years, I mean, I've done so many shows on just the corruption that was going on at Fannie and Freddie. It amazes me that that you would consider not putting in salary caps for these morons. The idea that they're in charge of that big of a thing just kind of boggles my mind. All right, H.R. 766, the Financial Institution Customer Protection Act of 2015. This one's a sweetheart. Yes, this stuff just is so annoying that you even have to make a law about this. H.R. 766 prevents federal banking agencies from abusing executive power when preventing businesses from using depository institution. This is in direct response to the Obama administration's Operation Choke Point, which is coercing banks into cutting off relations with perfectly legal businesses. And so basically anything that the administration didn't like politically, like in this case, gun stores, gun manufacturers, manufacturers of accessories for firearms. I don't think it was just gun folks. I think there was a variety of folks who were targeted by Choke Point. But it wasn't even like they tried to be too secretive about it. They simply went to these institutions and said, hey, you know, we'd really appreciate it if, you know, they come around for a loan. You know, maybe you turn them away. Just because, you know, that's the way we like to do things. I know we got this government thing that we normally got to do to get things done. But, you know, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. That kind of thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So this will at least put a little hurdle in front of that process. Next, H.R. 3189, the Fed Oversight Reform and Modernization Act of 2015. That one sounds like a doozy. H.R. 3189 would improve the economy's performance by bringing greater accountability and transparency to the Federal Reserve. I'm not sure that that's true. I find it very difficult to believe. I'm looking at the thing right now, and it says here, to amend the Federal Reserve Act to establish requirements for policy rules and blackout periods of the Federal Open Market Committee to establish requirements for certain activities of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, and to amend Title 31 United States Code to reform the manner in which the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System is audited and for other purposes. Well, you can't audit the Fed. So this kind of, I guess, opens the door for us to audit the Fed. Yeah. Anything that pulls the curtain back on the Fed, I think, is probably a good thing. So in the relatively near term, what do these mean for you as buyers, sellers, and investors? You know, in the near term, not much. You know, obviously, these are things that probably wouldn't even come into effect till next year. But they may come at a good time. If we see interest rates go up, and I know that I'm kind of stand of a little bit of opposition with popular opinion right now, even with folks that I frequently agree with, or folks that I've, you know, have seen be right an awful lot over the last decade, who are projecting something happening in September, maybe, you know, I'm just not so sure. It seems to me that at every turn, Yellen and the Fed tend to err on the side of protecting the stock market over everything else. But the stock market continues to kind of be down. A lot of stuff was up today. Apple was down. eBay was down, not by a whole lot. Google was up. Amazon was up. Disney was up. These are just ones I happen to track because I have an interest in them. But the Dow Jones in general was down, and the NASDAQ was up 17.5. So that was good. It was over 5,000. But I can't help but wonder if the stock market is already struggling, would they be willing to raise interest rates? It seems to me they'd want a stock market that's demonstrating some strength in order for them to reduce interest rates a little bit. But one reason why the stinking stock market's got strength at all is because interest rates are so ridiculously low. So I guess they're hoping maybe they can get into a place where not just low interest rates are what's buttressing it all up, and that a increase in interest rates wouldn't hit it. So I guess if I'm going to buy into what others are saying, that interest rates are going to go up, and I think I mentioned this sometime during the week, it'll be a very, very small increase. We're not talking about a 0.1. It'll be a 0.01 or a 0.001. It'll be something I think exceptionally small. I think they would want to test the waters with a firm decision to increase, but with a very weak increase, right? They'll come out and say, they'll phrase it like it's a huge, huge deal, because they'll want that to kind of be the headline for mass consumption. But what they'll do is a real small number, so the folks who pay attention to that stuff for real business reasons aren't freaked out. And that'll be a way for the Fed to sort of really test the waters, to sort of give the headline folks, the drive-by folks, this quote-unquote major change in direction. They'll call it a major change in direction. They'll call it the you know, a final step in the recovery, since the economy is doing so well now. You know, we're able to now raise interest rates by 0.01, and they'll do that, right? Or 0.001 or some extremely small number. And then see how it rides. And then if it doesn't really go anywhere, maybe they raise it again in a quarter or two. But it would be a very subtle, very, very slow raising of interest rates. And I'm not sure at what point the tipping point comes where folks who are investing money overseas see it as making more sense to be investing domestically because of interest rates. But when that happens, I think you'll absolutely see a end to the raising of the interest rate. The one thing the Fed has to be really careful about is this balancing act of where all the dollars are. So many of them are overseas, particularly in Europe right now, that by in raising interest rates here and making this market more attractive to having those dollars to come to, devaluing of the dollar domestically in terms of purchasing power would be ridiculous. So I don't know. I'm just not as convinced that A, they're going to do it anytime this year. I would guess if it's going to happen, it wouldn't be till next year. And I think we'd have to have a sustained period of stock market stability and good growth that isn't just fed by low interest rates in order for them to really do that. But that's just me. I'm just a real estate guy who tries to read as much as I can about a lot of different things that plug into real estate. But when these things do – the reason why I wanted to go down that road again – is because if that does happen, if things get more competitive in an interest rate kind of a way, one way that these changes could affect you as someone who's a seller or as a buyer is that what you might find is you might discover you have access to more lending products. Remember, I've tried to – and I had this conversation with a client yesterday. You have to think of a loan as anything else you would buy, a snowblower, a car. It's a thing you're buying. You're just buying money. You're buying the use of money, and that's what you're paying the interest rate for. Because and the idea is that the person or institution that loans you that money is loaning it to you because that's the best use of that money for them, right? They're getting a certain rate of return that reflects a smart business move. And in order for it to be a smart business move, they need to make enough money off of you in the term of your mortgage payments and interest to offset A, inflation, right? And if inflation's at 2%, that means that your interest rate has to be above 2%, because if it's not at 2% or higher, they're basically getting back the same buying power with each payment that they would have if they didn't loan the money to you at all. If they just – you see what I mean? They're not keeping up with inflation. So they want you to at least pay what it costs to hold money in terms of the inflationary effects. If a dollar drops in value by 2% each year because prices go up, you see where I'm going? Does that make sense? So that's just to break even. So they need to keep pace with inflation. The next thing they need to do is to compensate themselves for the fact they no longer can do something with that money because you have it. It's wrapped up in your house. So that's why you end up paying what you're paying today. You end up paying 4%. That what the bank is paying for that money is ridiculously low. It's virtually zero. So the reason you're paying a 4% interest rate is because it's got to keep up with inflation and it's got to compensate them enough to make it make sense for the money to go to you and not to someone in Europe, which is one reason why so much of the money we gave to banks ended up in Europe, because over there they're willing to pay a higher percent, right? And that's – it's a business decision. It's okay, I can either put the money in this bucket and let's say that this bucket is labeled Robert's house. And from Robert's house, I'll get a payment every month of X amount, and I'm making 4% off of that, which is good. Or I can put this into the French bucket, and they've promised to pay me 5%. Okay, great. And then there's other different international and regulatory things that may be additional cost to doing that, so you figure that in. But that's how that works. It's just about figuring out where the smartest bucket is, right? But what we'll see, I think, here are a couple of interesting things. I don't think the CEO pay limit thing for Fannie and Freddie is absolutely a feel-good thing. On an individual basis, the amounts they make aren't even a drop in the bucket, financially speaking, for the country. But I think from a doing the right thing standpoint, that's absolutely the way to go. In fact, I think there should be policies where their compensation is linked directly to smart things done in those organizations that actually achieve the stated goals. And when those stated goals don't happen, they make less money. They should make a base pay of about, I don't know what, an executive at Fannie and Freddie should make maybe what, $130,000 a year, if we're being nice. I know they make a crap ton more than that. But let's say we have a bonus structure that's based on the achievement of the goals of the organization. And if they achieve none of the goals of the organization in any measurable way, they get nothing. They get nada. They get zipped. So they get their $130,000 as their base pay, and that's all they get. The rest they would get would have to be tied to performance. And it's not. They get bonuses based on we feel like giving you a bonus even when you don't deserve it. If I'm not mistaken, when this whole thing first blew up, these guys gave themselves bonuses. So there's that. The consumer protection one. Absolutely. I mean, I think from a not House standpoint, from a the executive branch feeling like they do anything, they can do anything they want to screw with people engaged in 100% legal businesses, boggles my mind. The idea that they ever thought they should be allowed to do that, or that it amazes me actually that someone isn't going to jail for this. I'm stunned that this isn't breaking a law. And I have to think that if someone really goes in and looks carefully enough, even at just the freaking Constitution, there's got to be something to send somebody to jail for. And the fact that they've been doing this all this time. They've been doing it for years, and it's been in the paper for quite some time. Reform Modernization Act. Yeah. See, and that's not one you want to ask me about. That's the one that deals directly with the Fed and trying to make them more transparent. If I had my way, we would send everybody who works for the Fed a pink slip and burn the building down. And we would have Congress do their job instead of delegating it to a non-government entity, which is the Fed. The Federal Reserve is neither federal nor a reserve. It holds no money. And it's not a government institution. It's a private corporation. And basically it was created in 1910 to or thereabouts to base – it's read The Creature from Jekyll Island. Nothing will annoy you more about the fact that the Fed exists once you've read just the first 30 pages of of The Creature from Jekyll Island. You know, I would like – and I don't know. I've been told I have a fairly decent speaking voice. I would love to be the guy who speaks The Creature from Jekyll Island book. I would absolutely love the opportunity to do the spoken version of that for sale. I feel like I could bring a very unique level of passion to what is said in that book because it just – oh, it is – anybody who wants to understand why there's a segment of the population who is ridiculously frustrated over the Fed or why the Fed is a big deal or why when certain braver members of Congress talk about taking on the Fed or auditing the Fed or doing things to the Fed or getting rid of the Fed, if you just took the time to read that book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, you would understand why. And I'm not even suggesting that you read that book and assume it everything it tells you is the truth. It's an exceptionally well-annotated book. The bibliography alone is worth its weight in gold. And so anything you think can't possibly be true, check it. Go ahead and check it and just do your due diligence. And I think if you do, you'll realize that the Fed is a bad thing, that the Fed is the source of problems, not the solution for them. And no matter how you look at it, the Fed has never achieved its stated goal of preventing booms and busts and leveling things. All it did was make the booms and busts bigger. And you don't have to take my word for it. Go read that book. All right. What other bill? There was one more bill. Home buyers assistance. With lower regulations, again, I think what you may find is lenders are able to react a little bit more quickly. They're able to offer you different lending instruments. After these pass, they may be able to get a little bit more creative. But here's the problem. Banking institutions in general move at glacial speeds. So even once these things change, it's going to take one brave little bank to come out with some really interesting spin on a loan or to create a new product or whatever for others to sort of react. Do not expect innovation from Chase and Wells Fargo and Bank of America. Oh, Lord, don't expect anything from Bank of America. Don't expect any of those guys to start innovating. So what my suggestion will be is once this passes, start talking to the little guys. Start talking to just your local banks that have like six branches in your state or in your region. Talk to the ones that tend to be a little bit more creative tend to be the credit unions in local communities. Try them out too and see if they're offering any new lending products that will help you achieve your goals. And again, this might help you out if you're someone who's got a business idea or something else and you want to use the equity in your home to try to achieve that. This may pave the way for different loan opportunities where you can get at some of the equity in your home to use as collateral to finance some of those efforts. There's already vehicles around to do that right now, but this may make some more attractive ones for you in your search if you're trying to get that stuff done. All right. Just thought that was some interesting info to cover today. A little something nice to sort of wrap up a Thursday evening and lead us on into a Friday, which hopefully there will, in the latest news for Friday, there will be something super sexy that we could cover in the show. I have a couple of different interviews lined up. I've got a great one from a lady who has written a book on staging a home. We're going to talk about her book. She has been kind enough to send me a copy of the book, so I'm going to read it first before we do the interview. You know, how else can I ask an intelligent question, right, unless I've actually read her book? If her book stinks and I tell her that it stinks, she may decide to change her mind and not come on the show, but we'll see how that goes. I've read the first couple of chapters, and so far I'm impressed. I think it's good stuff. But we'll not only cover her book and the great information that so far I've seen included in it, but we'll also talk about her achieving her goals as an author. And she's also got some other things going on that I can see from her website. So we'll use her as an opportunity not only to potentially get some great information on staging your house, but we'll also use it as an opportunity for folks out there who may have sort of goals in the same area. Maybe you're not interested in writing a book about staging, but maybe you're interested in writing a book and you'd like to hear from somebody who did it and managed to make it happen. So we'll hopefully get some good information from her on that as well. So we'll pump her stuff up, and we'll also have her share maybe some of her success and failures along her path to reach as high as she has so far. We've also got who else? I've got a venture capitalist guy who has said he'd be willing to come on the show. So, you know, we're starting to get a nice little queue of folks who've consented to come on the show. And I'm looking forward to sharing the experience of those folks with you as we head forward with the show, doing it daily. The other thing I wanted to update everyone to is we're going to be doing it every day of the work week. So it'll be Monday through Friday. I'm not going to do it Saturdays and Sundays as well. I wanted to try it, but well, at least I'm not going to do it this Saturday and Sunday. I wanted to try and see how it felt. So for the first week we did the show, I did it on the weekend just to kind of get a feel for it. Now I'm going to go ahead and do a weekend where I don't do it and just see how that feels for the flow. And we'll go from there. I have a suspicion I'm going to want to maybe take those 2 days off and not do the show every day of the week, but we'll see how it goes. I'm actually enjoying it. I like the fact that I get to focus more clearly on a show. I'm not quite in my head calculating, you know, how many more minutes should I talk about this before I go on to the next article. I'm able to sort of just empty the brain on the topic so that we can have it fully covered. So, and I think that's been working fairly well. We'll see what happens when I hit a topic that might go a lot longer than say the 30 to 45 minute window I'm kind of shooting for. I'm going to err on the side of completely talking about something instead of adhering to an artificially created duration of a show. I think if we've got a good topic and we've got good data to cover, I think you folks would rather have it get covered than not, just because I've reached the 45-minute mark. I'm assuming that's true. All right, folks. That's all I got for tonight. Appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you'd like to get in contact with me, head on over to www.therebelbroker.com. The transition process continues. Again, you won't see any changes. The feed will remain the same that's used by iTunes and by Stitcher. One thing I have discovered, though, is that there are folks who have subscribed to the podcast directly through Blog Talk Radio. If you have subscribed directly through Blog Talk Radio, that will stop working. So for those of you who consume this and your RSS feed has Blog Talk Radio anywhere in it, www.feed.blogtalkradio or anything with Blog Talk Radio in it, that feed's going to stop working. So go take a quick look at your feed right now. Verify that you're getting it through iTunes or Stitcher, and delete the old Blog Talk Radio feed. There's not a ton of you. The number of folks who found my feed through Blog Talk Radio is actually only about 10% of my listeners, but I'd hate to lose 10% of my listeners in the transition. That's going to happen no later than October 1st. So keep that in mind. We've still got plenty of time. I'll remind you in future shows as we move along, but I just want to make sure everyone has that sort of at least bouncing around in the back of their head. Again, head on over to www.therebelbroker if you'd like to get in contact with me. Always anxious to hear your stories of success or failure along the road to financial independence. So please make time to share those with me. I'd really appreciate it. And if it's a long story, just say, hey, in your message, it's a long story, Robert. Here's my phone number. Why don't you give me a call? Thanks again, everyone. Look forward to talking to you tomorrow.